Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
And good morning, everybody. Good to be back in the big chair. I was off yesterday. Thanks for doing a noble job.
I heard from multiple people
they missed you,
and they only listened for you.
Oh, that's not right. Whenever people talk to me about the show, I said it's a two-person show for a reason, because we both like doing it together.
We do.
Not that we don't do the shows individually. I know in a couple of weeks you're going to be off for a chunk of time. I'm doing the show myself, which I also enjoy because I did it for so many years. But the point of this is, point taken, is that we like to do the back and forth. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it fun and hopefully makes it interesting for all of you. So I will fully admit, I sort of unplugged this weekend and I had to catch up quickly. And one of the biggest...
Well, yesterday was a doozy.
Yes.
As far as news. So yes. We have plenty to talk about today.
Let's go to Maine. Which is a lovely state, by the way.
So I think we found the red line.
Yes, I think so.
You know, last month we were talking about where is the red line as far as Graham Plattner. Obviously there was other candidates that we were also talking about, Ken Paxton and all of his baggage. And the willingness, I think Joe was on here saying, you know, this is a man who's grown. He's apologized, which is more than some other politicians have done. And then yesterday... very credible report as far as how it was corroborated from Politico on Jenny Rossicott, who was also referenced in the New York Times article from about a month ago, but this allegation was not in there. Talks about in 2021, then Graham Plattner had come uninvited to her house while they were dating and did not stop when she asked him to stop. And I don't think anyone at this point is saying, maybe in some comment section somewhere, there's people saying that he still needs to stay in. But at this point, it seems as though the red line has actually been crossed and he's losing endorsements. And he can't go on. He has to drop out.
Well, that's an interesting point because, I mean, their primary was in June. This has been a settled race. Collins, Plattner for, you know, a month and a half. So this sort of is the storyline. But as we know, when someone drops out of a race like this, we obviously live through 2024 with...
Well, that's exactly what's going to happen here, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully he drops out and the Maine Democrats get to pick a candidate then. And I don't know enough about the, let's say, sophistication or how much the movement that Graham Plattner had been building is in line with Democratic leadership in that state. Like, I don't know what this is going to look like. Do they just go with Janet Mills? I have no idea. And that is a problem for the state. I don't know if they're going to be able to find someone who at this point can challenge Susan Collins. But that's basically, he has to drop out by Monday and then they can appoint someone basically.
So full disclosure, I don't spend a lot of time talking about other states' politics, but this was a big, big race.
It's a big one.
It involves potentially to take over the Senate by Democrats over Republicans who hold both houses right now. I can remember, I don't know how many months ago, you shared an interview done by the New York Times journalist Lulu. I always forget her last name. I just go by Lulu. She's a fantastic journalist. She does great work. And she interviewed Graham Plattner and talked about some of these things. A lot of conversation about a tattoo. He says skull and crossbones. Other people call it Nazi tattoo. That's where some of the apologies came out.
That? It's a bunch of, it's like thousands and thousands of Reddit posts.
Yeah, and posts.
And then with the New York Times article, there's a whole timeline, but it was basically, then there was also the fact that he had been sexting women outside of his marriage, and some of the accounts, while deleted from his phone, were still technically active.
And he said he told his party all of this stuff beforehand.
Well, I don't know if he told all of them.
Yeah. And that's really my, before we hear from Graham Plattner, because he's denying this story.
Pausing his campaign.
Yes. I think
he said, a breath.
Yeah.
Or whatever
a week long pause, which is really all he has, basically. Otherwise, he's the candidate, right? If he doesn't drop out, he's the candidate. And I don't know enough about Maine, but I'm guessing that's not going to end well if Democrats are hoping to take that seat. Just my opinion. Don't know. But I'm curious how we got here, because every candidate is flawed in many different and unique ways. But this guy had a pretty strong track record of doing some pretty outlandish things. He blames some of it on guys being guys, military service,
PTSD.
All that stuff. As someone who, if you lived in Maine, might vote for a Graham Plattner, what does this suggest to you about candidate selection, letting some stuff go because you think ultimately the candidate is bigger than that or it's a bigger story? What does it say to you?
Well,
because there's a lot here.
What it says to me is how hungry a certain part of the population is for authenticity and charisma and a good messenger and someone who they believe is going to go and fight for things for working class. So they are so desperate for it. And not just them, because this was a national attention.
Mega attention.
This is like, you know, even after the last handful of accusations come out, like it's war zones in certain comment sections of left-leaning, probably men, being just vitriolic to women who have, like, maybe this is a red flag. And I think this gets into a topic that we've talked about before, is like, women are not the sacrificial lambs for political power. And they have been, but we can't keep letting them be. But I think it goes back to that there was such a hunger and desire that they were willing to overlook. I mean, it was 154,000 voters in the Democratic primary for this guy. And there was already a lot already out there that we're willing to overlook because of how electrifying the campaign felt. And so I think the big thing is find more people like him who can speak like him that don't have all of this, like, lot of baggage.
Do you think we'll hear from Mr. Plattner after the break, but do you think this was a vetting problem?
Yes.
Because that,
I mean, we know that Wall Street Journal reported on this.
Yeah.
As far as, like, I think it's Dan Maraff is his lead strategist, and it costs upwards of $20,000 and can take weeks to do a thorough background check. He was cheap and fast and didn't do that. The vetting process was like 3 days.
Yeah, days instead of weeks and or months.
And so, like, knew some of the, he did an interview with Wall Street Journal, and Dan Maraff did. And, you know, he said they got some of the Reddit posts, but not all the Reddit posts. And even with the ones that he had, he's like, kind of shrugged.
We'll hear from Mr. Plattner, Graham Plattner, candidate for U.S. Senate in the state of Maine. After this, on Point Taken, good to be back. Kristen and Steve, 620 WTMJ. We are in Wisconsin, broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios here at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. But we're talking about the state of Maine. Breaking news story over the weekend. Graham Plattner, candidates for U.S. Senate. He's the guy who won the primary June 9th in Maine against Susan Collins, who's been there for a long time, Republican candidate. Let's hear, as I said earlier, Graham Plattner's denying the accusations of rape. Let's hear from the candidate right now.
So, regardless of the inaccuracy of the reporting, but mindful of the political reality it will inflict, we are taking the time to reflect on the best path forward for the state that I love, the people that I love, the movement I belong to, and the goal of defeating Susan Collins. Those were the goals when we launched this campaign, and they remain my goals today. On June 9th, 154,058 Mainers, the most in primary history, voted to reject a broken politics beholden to Washington and the donor class. They voted for hope, for change, to take back our economy, to take back our power, and to take back our Senate seat. Throughout it all, you never turned your back on me, and I will not turn my back on you now. Every one of you deserves to see that vision come to fruition and see Susan Collins defeated. And we will use every tool at our disposal to do so. As Maine goes, so goes the nation.
A little bit of Graham Plattner's denial of rape accusations. So two questions for you. Do you believe him? And in the case of the political context, do you think voters will believe him in the election?
No and no. I mean, I think how do I put this? In the text messages that Jenny Rossicott handed over to Politico, in how she talked to her friend about him in text messages, I think this was like 2023. I think she called him careless about consent and being a woman who, like, I know exactly what that means. And I don't think, I mean, and in knowing how how drunk aggressive men can be. I absolutely believe her.
So I don't know him as well as you know, as a candidate, because you shared with me.
I mean, this is why I think I'm feeling,
I'm curious about that, because that you're a woman, you're in that position. You know what that feels like. You just talked about the aggressiveness of men.
I think I'm probably feeling as torn as Jenny Rassicot is. Like, she, so we have the for that, we'll play it in a second, because she took so long to come out with this, because she's like, I share politics with this person, and she saw the momentum of what was possible, but she also was sitting on this information. And so she finally decided, like, people deserve to know who he is. And I think that is, like, what I said before, as far as the feeling that people are so hungry for the message, like, that you heard from him. And, like, I'm one of them, right? Like, as much as I try to be objective on this show and have a cynicism across the board, I'm not perfect. I have bias. But I would say when I listened to him talk, there was things of the commitment and the passion that he spoke with about things that I also believe in. Like, even some of these prior red flags, I wanted to believe. I wanted that confirmation bias of, maybe he's grown and at least he's apologized. And, you know, he was, I don't know what it was like to go to war and all of these different things, because you just want to hang on to the hope that maybe he's as good as he sounds in these passionate speeches and how he's connecting to people. And maybe he has grown, right? Like, he did connect with all these people. That does not mean you get to be a senator.
Did the party of Democrats in Maine, did they fail the voters by not doing the things they should have done?
I think there's so much blame to spread around. First of all, Graham Plattner should have never run if he knew that he had this many skeletons in his background.
He's a confident guy. I've seen a couple interviews with him.
But, like, that's, like, first and foremost, this is also on him. It's on the guy, the consultants who recruited him, who didn't vet him well enough. And it's also on Chuck Schumer, instead of pushing Janet Mills down everyone's throat, finding another person who has this, like, listening to your base and what they want, and instead of having, like, this safe 78-year-old candidate, find a different person that you can back that isn't necessarily this guy. And so I think there is, across the board, there's lessons to be learned.
So let's take a break. I want to ask you after the break, and I don't want to just make this about you, but I'm curious, because I'm catching up to this story, and you've known this story, Graham Plattner's story, for a lot longer than I have. You've shared a lot of stuff with me. What this says to, because I do hear the hope and change part in his comments, and I've seen that in some of the interviews he's done with major media companies. That's something he focused on, and he hyper-focused on why Susan Collins was bad for Maine. But ultimately, when we're trying to assess candidates, vetting is one piece of it. But in this case, voters spoke pretty loudly.
I know.
Loudly and clearly on June 9th.
I know.
That's a record number of voters. That's not insignificant. How does it shape our future elections when you're looking for hope and change? America's angry. Wisconsin's angry. Maine's angry. How do you get to a candidate that's not going to blow it up days and weeks before an election?
Well, if it's a woman, I think they have less likely that she would have done sexual assault.
Maybe that's
prior
your
to
answer.
Her campaign.
We'll explore that after this on Point Taken.
Welcome back to Point Taken. I'm Kristen. Steve is back from his long weekend. And we're wrapping up our conversation around Graham Plattner. I hope he drops today. It sounds like the behind the scenes process of what would happen for the state party to pick someone is not very clear. It's yet to be spelled out. So that is something to watch. I feel really bad for Maine voters.
Yeah.
I feel really bad. I feel really bad for people who've been let down by this and how excited they were. I mean, I don't even get to vote for the guy. And it's like, and like I said, this is the red line. It should be way further. I mean, maybe earlier than this in a lot of ways. But as far as, I'm at least relieved that he's losing endorsements and that there is not still, at least from any kind of, like, official standpoint, people who are like, no, I think he's still the guy. I think we stick with them. Like, at least what I've seen,
it doesn't feel like that.
Yes, that people are pressuring him to drop out, and so that is good.
I think he had like a 4-point lead against Collins in the latest polling, 4-6.
It was close, yeah. Right? And I mean, she won last time when the polls had her down by 10, right? So who knows what that actually meant. And I have no, there's, I don't even have a pulse on the other candidates besides who Janet Mills is. But I think just going back to the fact that we are in these positions, we kind of touched on in our 250 reflection with Joe and Bill, as far as the difference between people who are meant to govern and the difference between people who are really good at campaigning. And unfortunately, in our system, you need to be really good at the latter in order to do the former. And the appetite, or like the characteristics of someone who's really good at campaigning, is kind of overlaps with like a sociopath, right? As far as like this, like extreme confidence, like very sociable, very charismatic, like all of these things of like on the Strengths Finder score, woo, very, very high, right? Doesn't necessarily mean that they present differently than maybe that they, who they actually are.
I would make the case when you open up races to people who want to potentially be an elected official, it's messier. They have storylines. We see it in Wisconsin. We see it in other places. There are messy storylines. And the reality is we have a president who also has a messy storyline in many significant ways that parallel, actually, if you think about it, the things he's been convicted of, right? Rape of a woman.
Well, not convicted. Oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. People forget. He hasn't served time for it. He has some pretty significant financial penalties that he's tried to put off and delay, but that's settled.
Isn't it technically held liable? Is the correct terminology?
I guess. Lots more to get to on Point Taken. It's a fascinating conversation to start the show in Maine. It is a Tuesday. I keep reminding myself because I, you know, foolishly walked in to get some stuff for the show and I was looking at the Monday folder. It's for me, it's Monday, right? I'm starting my work week, even though you were hard at work yesterday with Matt Smith. And did you have Dave yesterday?
Dave
Spano was
back. Talked about SpaceX. And actually, this was funny. I got a lot of feedback from the text line yesterday when I was solo, including one who was someone who was watching the YouTube stream. And
thank you.
You know, sometimes I'm a pretty smiley person, but sometimes when I'm listening intently, I have RBF. You can figure out what that means if you don't know what that means. And someone texted in being like, Kristen, you look fantastic today, but you need to smile when Dave is giving us good news. And I was like, has no one told you don't tell women to smile?
I was just going to say that because what little experience I have with saying that to some women, which I would never do anymore, it hasn't gone well.
You should smile more.
Yeah, you should smile more.
You'd be prettier when you smile.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. This next story is interesting to me. Because whatever you think about Mitch McConnell, and he served long as a senator for the country that we live in, he's had health issues all these weird times when he just stopped talking and it froze. Mm-hmm. He's been in the hospital for 3 weeks. There's some people, they ran an obituary. Somebody ran.
So it was an accident.
Was it the Hill?
It was the Hill.
Yeah.
And so yesterday, I forgot who sent this to me, but basically, so there's all these, no one's heard from him, and it just continues to
three
be.
3 weeks.
Updates from his staff.
CPR was performed on him 3 weeks ago.
And apparently also his wife is in China?
Yes.
So she's left the country. The Hill published prematurely an article titled, all caps, do not use a look back at Mitch McConnell's time in the Senate. So I don't know if that means they have news that we don't, or if they just wrote it in preparation for the inevitable. But so we don't know the status of him. And unfortunately, this is a political ending to a political life, because part of the reason that I think they're keeping this under wraps is a special election versus not a special election.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, is there something else? Because someone, I know Thomas Massie's name's getting thrown around as far as someone that Andy Beshear could appoint.
Yeah.
Is that how you understand that?
I don't know a lot about it, but I think that's what they were saying. He's the longest. He's 84, first of all, which again, 84. That's a long time. Longest serving Senate leader in history before stepping away for the majority leader role. This is his final term. He announced that last year. Obviously, we all remember the Merrick Garland thing where he just would not allow votes and the president's choice was not allowed to go forward. Who knows what that would have done to the makeup of the courts? Certainly changed it. But the gamesmanship of both the status of and health of members of Congress and the impact on, because it's the margins are so narrow now, there's legislative impact on this stuff. They're just playing games.
Well, this was how far off? When did Dianne Feinstein die? 4 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
And it was like the same story with her as far as like she was basically the Walking Dead and they were keeping her alive because it was part. And this was the same accusations as far as had it was a Senate race there for the Adam Schiff, the seat that now Adam Schiff has. But as far as Gavin Newsom had gone on record saying if he were to appoint that seat, it was going to be Barbara Boxer, most likely, because I think he said he was going to appoint a black woman. And obviously, once you're the incumbent, you have a leg up. And so at least the rumor mill was Nancy Pelosi was basically keeping Dianne Feinstein alive to help Adam Schiff's chances to become senator.
All of this stuff just drives me nuts. One, Congress has been a do-nothing Congress for a while now. This just makes and amplifies that. It makes it worse and amplifies it. Because what we're seeing is very little conversation and or legislation goes on because of these weird stories. The fact that they're, you know, in the other house, Speaker Johnson just sending them home constantly because they can't get anything done. He doesn't have a clear majority on anything. He's got Republicans breaking with Democrats now. And in the Senate, the margins are very slim. We've seen how many times the vice president come in and broke tiebreakers. You can't get anything done. And why all this matters to me, I believe in honesty in government. This flies in the face of that. Look, if he's recovering, fine. But a status report after 3 weeks that shows if he's alive or not might be a good idea. And frankly, and I get that voters elect, and it's very difficult to remove someone. If someone can't function in a job, there's got to be a timeline where they have to be removed, and there has to be a clear delineated process and how that happens, not leaving it up to whatever, mm-hmm. you know, oh, we're going to appoint, we're going to have a, no, it should be ironclad. This is what happens. If you cannot vote and you should not be able to be performative and just not go in session for the time that the 3 weeks that he's out, just to protect your slim majority. This stuff drives me nuts, but I'm certainly that it drives Americans nuts because the sole role of Congress is to spend our money wisely, hopefully. And two, pass legislation that improves in many different ways, hopefully, our bottom line as a country. We're not getting that. And it drives me nuts. And I'm not a Mitch McConnell fan. The guy should have been gone years ago. He's demonstrated his inability. And I understand somebody said he's a polio survivor. Awesome. But he was elected in 84. Okay? Last time I checked, it's 2026. That's a lot of years between that start date and that end date.
What do you think would be better? Age limit? Or
I'm starting to think
term limit.
I'm starting to think age limit and
term. Are you term limit guy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But again, the people who vote on term limits are the people who are not going to pass term limits.
I know.
So how is that going to change? Just like the way we spend money on campaigns. The people who benefited from it, they're not going to change the rules. So where we're at, we just get more and more lax with how we perform as government officials, government entities, whether it's Congress, state legislatures. And so much of it now is performative and just misleading us in how they spend our money. What do you think? I say he should be gone.
I think he should be gone.
I wish him a happy recovery, and hopefully he's in a position to be able to do that. But CPR was performed at him 3 weeks on him 3 weeks ago with no real, other than he's recovering from his staff, no other reports. And his wife went to another country.
That's weird to me.
In the midst of this. Explain that to me.
That one's a mystery to me. I don't know enough. I mean, I know that she's, I don't know. If anyone knows more insight on that, 855-616-1620.
We'll stay on politics after this on Point Taken on 620 WTMJ. Going back on the theme, I mean, we spent the hour talking about disappointments in Maine and certainly in our Congress and the Senate specifically. I guess maybe this is not, I'm going to ask you a question. Maybe this is naive, and I've watched politics for a long time, talked about it for 10 years, but I still have this hope that elected officials will do the right thing. Whether it's Maine or Washington, D.C., neither one of these stories seems like politicians, elected officials doing the right thing. In the case of Graham Plattner, he's a candidate.
When's the last time you feel
did the right thing?
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess, because it's like there's a lot of mistakes along the way. Like Joe Biden should have never run for a second term.
Yeah, true.
Let alone dropped out as late as he did. This, like the conflation of power and ego and nobody can do it but me. And
I'll give you an example locally. Like, I didn't vote for David Crowley, but
for Milwaukee County Executive?
No, I did vote for Milwaukee County Executive for David Crowley.
Is your vote in?
No.
Oh.
Last election when he ran for County Executive, I voted for him.
Oh.
He's running.
You didn't vote for him.
I'm talking about governor's race.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the primary.
But you haven't voted yet.
I have voted.
Oh.
But I'm not telling you who I voted for. I tell you, I didn't vote for David Crowley.
Oh, okay.
But I have mad respect for him because I think he does it the right way. He's not afraid of offending members of his own party. He's not afraid of saying things that are maybe outside what his party's policies are or guidelines or whatever. And he still does his damn job in a very tough situation. Milwaukee County budgets are challenging. Certainly a lot of problems. He shows up and then, by the way, runs a campaign for governor. I have mad respect for that. Again, whether he's going to be governor, not likely at this moment, probably. But again, anything can happen in a primary. I think he's an example, and that's one example.
So that's an example of someone you think who does do the right
thing. Yeah, older example on the other side, Jim Stonicky, big fan of his work in the assembly. I think he just showed up. He wasn't afraid to criticize his own party. He was very honest, very smart guy. He's out of politics now. He was an example of someone I trusted. I didn't vote for him because I wasn't in his district, but he's a guy that I respected in the job. I respect Tony Evers. He's a Democratic governor. Again, I didn't vote for him, but I like the work that he did in some areas. I believe there's no one's perfect. There's no perfect candidates or perfect elected officials. But when you're challenged to do something outside of what your party or what you think your Democrat friends want or your Republican friends want, I respect that. I'm not confident we're getting enough of that. We're getting less of that because it's so partisan now.
You say Tony Evers specifically, like people on the Democratic side were very mad that he signed those maps.
Yeah, I know.
Right? Because the expectation was that had it come from the Wisconsin Supreme Court, there would have been better maps for Democrats. But if you want to talk, if you think he did the right thing as far as it being bipartisan and trying to follow the process, like he did that, but he got a lot of flack from it from his side. And so is that the litmus test as far as like going against your party?
I think so.
For the sake of your morals and like a higher... what's good for the state or what's good for the country?
Yeah, because I think it separates you from, look, parties are idealistic. And I've heard candidates basically are asked like 20 questions about what they would like. And if they say yes to everything, I'm like, okay, so you can't like parse out anything that you don't think is a good idea. You just want everything. Nobody gets everything. So an ability to work across the aisle, ability to sometimes accept something that's not perfect in the act of legislation, or if you're a governor, in the act of your signature, shows me something. And when I see candidates or elected officials who are just so self-absorbed, they think they have all the answers. They are the only ones. Our party's a genius. Other party sucks and they're evil. I don't get that anymore. I hope there's more people that think like me, but I'm not sure that's true because we're seeing the extremes still get all the attention. Donald Trump still gets a lot of press, a lot of media. He's even more control this term than last term.
I feel like, I don't know if I've asked you this before, but which reform, electoral reform, do you think would make the biggest difference on not electing, like getting rid of the fringe? Because obviously our primary, our partisan primaries is one of the things people point to.
Right.
So, but I know some people really don't like jungle primaries. Or final five voting or ranked choice voting or whatever. Like, is there anything that you're championing that you feel like could be a better way to do it?
I wish there was a way to just pick the person and not have to identify party in our primaries because you have to basically be a Democrat or Republican, right? Or
independent. So you're not registered, but that's the thing. Like, yeah. you can.
You pick one side.
But you can only vote in one party's primaries.
You can also do the Green Party.
So you
or
can't
whatever.
Vote for, like, lieutenant governor on the Republican side and governor on the Democratic side, though that will spoil your ballot.
Yeah, the idea is that it prevents election hijinks or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
But aren't we ultimately just picking the right person based on what we think the right person that job would be?
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens in the general, though, right?
It's like, yeah,
in the general, you can go back and forth and have a split ticket vote, which I still think would have been a great ticket name for this show.
Split ticket?
Split ticket. I still think it's a great name.
Well, we could call that.
I think we have a lot of people who are split ticket voters that listen to us.
Yeah, we've got some texts on it. We'll read some of those texts. As you know, it's a very frustrating time for me. It's funny, you spend a lot of time talking about politics.
How are you frustrated? You just had a 4-day vacation.
That part's great. It's coming back and still talking about the stupidity of politics that's frustrating. That's,
well, you've been doing it for 10 years, man.
I know. Has it made me smarter or more stupid? That's the question. 855-616-1620. I'm curious to see how you respond to that. More with Kristen and Steve on 620 WTMJ after this. Text just said I've gotten smarter. I don't know if that's true, but I certainly have gotten more pissed off about where politics is going. And I've done like 3 public speaking engagements in the last few months, and almost everyone I started in the first couple minutes saying, here's the ironic thing. I talk about politics for a living, but I'll tell you right now, politics is stupid.
It is stupid. You know what it also pisses me off about how stupid politics is that it taints people's ideas as far as what good things government can do.
Yes.
I was having a fun conversation with a friend of mine who worked for Bloomberg when he was mayor. She's worked in the transition team for the mayor in San Francisco. She now lives here. And she's always worked in economic development. And we were talking about big ideas for Milwaukee. And the idea of like getting people to be bought in on when it works well, government can do really cool things, especially private and public partnerships. But I feel like people conflate governing with politics, and one is way more salacious and newsworthy than like the boring slog of government. And so what do we talk about more?
Yeah, we're in a pickle, as they used to say. And I don't know how we get out of it.
By the way, pickle story?
Yes, quickly.
Bread and butter pickles? So gross.
Really? I like them.
Oh, I hate them. And I gave one, Frankie, who loves dill pickles.
Didn't like
she
it.
She took one off someone's plate yesterday, and she tried to eat it. She goes, ugh, and she just threw it. I was like, that's my girl.
There you go. The pickle content you didn't know you needed at the end of the first hour of Point Taken. We're going to go a little sports.
Sports.
Yeah.
Sports and a little politics.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is political, right?
It is, and stupid. All right, news is next.
All right, well, this was a story that I don't know what we were paying attention to last week that we... And granted, we're not a sports show, but UW-Madison appointed a new athletic director.
It's more than sports, too.
It is more than sports. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's definitely how well the football team's definitely an economic story. Mm-hmm. But I don't know how I totally missed this, but on July 1st, UW-Madison named a Wisconsin native as the new athletic director. And so I wanted to get a former Badger and our teammate, Ben Brust, in to talk about it, because I asked him yesterday as he walked by, I was like, do you have opinions on this? He goes, do I have opinions? And I was like,
yeah.
All right, well then come on and share them with
strong.
Us.
Because yeah, nice.
I know nothing about this guy. So welcome, Ben Brust, host of Kyle and Brust on ESPN Milwaukee.
Considering that as part of state tax dollars, it's going to help NIL as well.
I heard that conversation.
Come
on,
that's got to be something you guys talk about.
Oh, yeah. So Sean Eichhurst, tell us what you know about him.
Well, he was under the Barry Alvarez School of Learning to be an athletic director very early on in his career. So when you think about Wisconsin, a lot of people say, okay, check. You know, Barry Alvarez has a statue. He's amazing. He's the Don. Some experience there. He was associate AD only 1 year when I was there. I think it was 07 to 11. I was there 10 to 11. So, again, I was a freshman. I didn't really know the athletic directors. I didn't play either as a freshman. But I remember seeing his face. But ultimately, where the majority of the conversation lands is his time at Nebraska as the athletic director. Coming into a school that has a strong pride of their football program, right? They still think they're living in the 90s, but they're not. But Bo Pelini was their head coach, and he had won consistently around 9 games in the fan base, although 9 games is good.
He had like a 3-1 win to loss average in his career there.
Correct.
Yes.
And so although that is good, I think the fan base is like, all right, can we take good to great? Maybe similarly to how Wisconsin Badgers fans looked at the time when Chris left and they brought in Fickell, and the expectations changed, like going from good to great, right? Like, I could argue they were great as well, because they went to a 2017 Big Ten title and a 2019 Big Ten title. So there was something there. How do you take that to the next level? Now, he made a bad hire in Mike Riley, who struggled at Nebraska. So that's one portion of his journey. The interesting portion right now is he was in Texas, and at Texas as the deputy AD and a director of football operations, this is the new world of college athletics that he was a part of for a major university for football.
This is UT, not AM.
This is Texas, right? And so that's a lot of money that you have to raise and manage. So I think when you look at it, you could be like, well, this guy really screwed something up at Nebraska. Or you can look at it in the other way of, well, he found success for a football program, managing money, being a part of the football program. And I like, in my mind, to say positive for would be, well, I understand that Nebraska didn't go that the way that I think he would have liked or the fans would have liked, but he was raising money for a huge institution. If you Google right now what the most important role of an athletic director is, it's not going to say what it said 10 years ago. It's going to say fundraising and money, and that's the number one aspect of what you need him to do.
That's the way I feel about this, because it seems like he potentially, because of his Texas experience, not necessarily Nebraska, he's wired for success. He understands the whole sphere of things that an AD has to work on now. Yeah, on-field success is great, and achieving the biggest thing, which is a national championship, everybody wants that. Only some people get it. Only some institutions get it. This may be a deeper hire. Maybe he has all the other things that could essentially make that story work here.
You'd like to hope all the different experiences, yes, throughout the different eras will help him be the athletic director that, again, talking about an athletic director isn't that
fun. It's not sexy at all.
But what I will say is he did join Wildian Tausch on ESPN Wisconsin, and I'm not going to say I walked away being like, wow. And I don't think you were ever going to, right? Like, it's not like he was Barry Alvarez saying buy your season tickets now. But what I do know is, as someone who grew up in an area where I never felt connected to a football program, when I came to Wisconsin, my eyes opened up to the experience. We went to Rose Bowl, freshman, sophomore, and junior year while I was in college. Obviously, senior year, we had success going to the Final Four. And then when I was gone, the national championship the year after. I mentioned the 17-19 success for the football team. All I care about is finding ways to win football games. He's come into a spot where the coach who's been there, you're paying $8 million a year, went 4-8. I know the schedule is tough, but I don't care. 4-8 is unacceptable for the amount of money that you've put towards a head football coach. Now, getting all the other assets and resources put together where you can raise the right money, recruit the right kids, get the right kids in the transfer portal, that better work this year, because again, if it doesn't, like, you're kind of in a lame duck situation where you have to prove that you are worth the job, Luke Fickell. Otherwise, as a new AD, similarly but different from an Ed Policy standpoint for the Packers, he decided to extend Matt LaFleur after his contract was going to head into that 1 year or null, and he didn't want that. But he's got to perform. And all I care about is seeing wins on the football field. You know why? Because if you win on the football field, everything else takes care of itself.
Yeah.
You already have a great Wisconsin volleyball head coach in Kelly Sheffield. They continuously make Final Fours in volleyball. You could talk about Mark Johnson. He's been amazing for the women's hockey team.
Stashing him up.
Men's hockey, they went to a Frozen Four. So, like, all that is good, but the long-term effects, it'd be hard to continuously sustain that as success if you don't have the football program driving revenue as much as possible.
Can you stick around for another segment?
You can do whatever you want.
I want to ask you, as a basketball superstar for Madison, if you're angry or mad that the football team gets most of the attention. But Ben Brust, our guest, he's a star on ESPN and all-around good guy. I see him all the time at work here at the Good Karma Brands. So I guess I'll put it from a fan's perspective. So much attention on the football program, and that sort of drives everything, whether it's the coaching staff, Luke Fickell under the gun this year after a 4-8 season last year, as you talked about earlier, and all the other success, but the AD is responsible for all of that. But again, the hyper-focus on football, you're a basketball star for Madison. What does that make you feel like? It's like, is that just the nature of the business now? Football wins, everything else is just sort of tag along?
I mean, a little bit different, because when I was playing, we were able to go to a Final Four.
You guys were good.
Yeah.
For the first time since 2000. And then they went again in 2015. So that was an experience where students were able to experience great football and basketball at the same time. So that was obviously creating an unbelievable environment. But even sitting here right now as someone who's an alum of the basketball team, I'm not like, I know Greg Gard's doing a great job of the transfer portal. I know the conversation is they want to see him get to the second weekend for the first time since 2017. But even in my mind, it's football. It's football. It's football. It's football.
Is it because football can bring in so much more money? Because obviously so many more people can go to a football game.
I think it's just because it's the nature of the state. This is a football state at the end of the day. People have traditions on Sunday. Every morning when they wake up, they know what they're going to do to get ready for a Packer game. People have traditions every Saturday that there's a home game in Madison in Camp Randall.
Even people who had never went to UW-Madison.
Correct. Yeah. Like myself, as somebody who never went up to Wisconsin until I came here, my eyes opened up to this whole new world. I was like, this is amazing. You're telling me on Saturdays in September, in October, it's beautiful outside. Now, I didn't get to enjoy them as much in October because then we started practicing and started gearing up. But we usually have one game or two games in September where we could immerse ourselves in that experience. And that experience is unmatched. And when you have a great product, you have the environment, you have the fandom, you have the tailgating, you have everything you need to create an unbelievable experience that keeps you coming back for more. Winning helps that, right? I think it's still fun to go up for a weekend and get together with people who are alumni, but it also drives people who aren't alumni to it because it becomes an appointment viewing thing where it's like, I can't miss a game at Camp Randall. I don't care who they're playing. The team's good right now. If I can get this ticket for this game, I got to do it. And there's none of that right
now. Is this AD hire a safe hire?
Safe-ish. I wouldn't call it full safe, but I would say safe-ish. I mean,
got the pedigree.
Anytime in Wisconsin, it feels as if they have Wisconsin in their background, grew up here or was here, you're going to call it safe. I thought it was an opportunity to maybe go outside the box. I know they did that with football with Luke Fickell, but were you able to maybe get somebody from a different organization? And I say organization because it's what it feels like in college athletics now. It's basically run like a professional sports team. Could you get somebody who had success that was a bad program but had success in NIL? There's examples of teams that were so bad over the last 20 years that have come into the forefront.
Well, that's Indiana, like the reigning
Indiana,
national
obviously,
right?
Like Vanderbilt, you wouldn't think was a good football program, but they did a good job of finding ways to put a successful team out there relative to where they have been. So that's where I'm leaning into the fact that he was at Texas, right? And if he's got the Wisconsin background and was around a powerhouse SEC school to raise money and see success there, I'm hoping that bridging the Wisconsin and the experience plus the fundraising equals success for Sean Eichhorst and the football team.
Where do we rank currently when it comes to fundraising? Because I know like Michigan State had the CEO of AquaSure. Yeah, they donated like $230 million or whatever.
Cuban wrote a $30 to $40 million check after the first year of showing success.
So where do we stand? And isn't this part of the criticism for McIntosh? Because like he didn't return people's phone calls who wanted to donate, right?
Yeah, that's the thing is ultimately that's why I led with what I led with from the job of an AD. It's not what it used to be. It's not as much administration as much as it is relationship building, donor base building, fundraising. And so that's obviously where I continue to just go back to the same talking point that I have, because it's all we really have on him for in this era.
How does that make you feel as a guy who played?
Jealous.
I was going to say, as a guy who played, and your teammate, Nigel Hayes, was part of the lawsuit, wasn't he?
Yes, and I remember when I was gone, he was maybe a junior at Wisconsin College Game Day, had come to Madison, he was holding a sign with his Venmo or something, got in trouble for that, but like, I know some of the figures of what some of these players are making, and it's an insane amount of money, and I don't blame them, because in this, if you can get it, go get it. But I'm definitely jealous, considering how
much success. Is there any part of you that thinks there's a better way to do it? Or are you like, this is what it should have always been?
Whatever I think doesn't matter, because what felt like was going to get better in terms of regulations and whatnot, it has not gotten any closer. There's supposed to be like third party, I think it was Deloitte or something, was going to like look at all of the NIL deals and make sure it's fair market value. But who's to say what's fair?
Yeah.
Right? Like how do you say what's fair for a kid to get on an NIL endorsement? But it's not even NIL. That's the one term I hate. It's not name, image, and likeness. You're just paying players is what it is. Yeah. It drives me nuts. So like in this NIL era, it's not the NIL. It's just paying players is what it is.
You can hear more of that. Kyle and Bruss coming up at 2 p.m. this afternoon.
Kyle is back from his honeymoon, so I will have him. That's right.
You finally
like
married that girl, huh?
Yes.
Nice.
It was like 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
Not that long.
Well, I just got a new producer who's been with his girlfriend for 9 years, so.
Oh, you got to roast him.
He's new. I got to make sure I can roast him.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, let's find out the backstory on that one. Ben Bruss, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I didn't pay any attention to the royal wedding that happened at Madison Square Garden. Some singer and football player got hitched.
They got hitched. I didn't pay attention. I was waiting just to see what would come across my social media. I wasn't like actively waiting for leaks and things to come out. Mm-hmm. What was interesting, though, as far as a conversation I had over the weekend as to why, because I think a lot of people were like, Madison Square Garden, like, why? What? It's like an old arena.
Total control.
And that's what we're talking about. The fact is, like, if you get married in a closed arena, mm-hmm. no aerial paparazzi, like, snooping in on things. They obviously have, like, facial recognition cameras inside of the arena. So they have, they're fully aware of who's in there at any given time. I think I was talking to David Caruso yesterday, local event planner extraordinaire, because he was waiting to come on midday. So we were talking about it yesterday. And he confirmed that he had seen somewhere that they forced everyone who came in had to put their phone in one of those.
Like a concert.
Yeah, a concert where you can't take pictures. You can't do anything. And so there hasn't been a ton. There's certainly not been any pictures. The only pictures I've seen is people who were invited in their outfits like before they got there. But it was interesting because, like everything, the prediction markets had something to say, or at least something to bet on when it came to.
What were the bets?
So some of the bets, there was everything from the date to the guest list. And there was over $6.3 million in total trading volume over platforms like Kalshi and Polymarket. So what's interesting, though, is most of the bets were coming from women who had been, you know, who were big Taylor Swift fans and were like brand new accounts, right? Like they had not had any history of betting before they got in and were making bets on different things. So part of it was what they were going to wear. So I guess we know that they both wore custom Dior. So her dress and his tux. So some people won on that. I think people were predicting who, if there would be a bridal party or not. There wasn't. Her brother was her man of honor. And then
That's different.
I would have had my best friend's a guy. And so we didn't do it at all. And so he gave a speech at my dinner. Hmm. So there's no bridesmaids, but I guess there was bets on the guest list. Like there was a bunch of different things. And so that's a fair amount of money that people won over the weekend for that.
As I said before the show, I think it's all about marketing. She's going to somehow capture this and sell it. Could be a film.
Oh, there's probably a documentary or a docuseries or something.
And I would bet that these markets also have bets on how long the marriage lasts.
Mm. That feels like a long thing that you have to hold
play.
Out for, right?
It's a long play, yeah.
You know, it's interesting because I feel when this relationship first sprouted and when they got engaged, like as someone who found the love of my life late in life, I was very happy for her. They seem very happy, but there is a lot of spectacle around this.
Yeah.
There's a lot of,
this is pomp and circumstance. Yeah. This is like as big as it gets.
I don't know if this kind of wedding helped much as far as the speculation that this whole relationship is a PR play.
Why I called it a royal wedding. A lot of folks spending some time at the local establishments watching the World Cup games, U.S. team. And you'd spend some time at, Nomad?
I went to Nomad last week. Yeah. We watched it at first half at a friend's house last night and the second half at home because Frankie has a bedtime.
Ah, and in my neck of the woods, lots of attention. I saw a couple local stories over the weekend on local TV with Moran's Pub, South Milwaukee. And joining us on the hotline, James Moran, owner of Moran's Pub. Welcome, James.
Hey, guys.
All right, so I love this story because, one, I'm a big fan of local business, and I love the way, through social media, through your interviews, and all the things related to this World Cup performance by the U.S. team, you celebrate the connection between business and community. How much fun was presenting this to your customers?
Oh, gosh. It's been an unbelievable experience, just this whole World Cup. The impact on us, our neighbors, Azteca, Mexican restaurants across the street, and then some of the other local businesses that we've been able to promote along the way by, you know, just offering half-price beer if you go to the Bakehouse 23 on Milwaukee Avenue here in South Milwaukee. You buy any product, bring that receipt over to us, and we'll give you a half-price beer. And they ended up selling out their bakery products in about 2 hours. So that was such a great success, and it felt really good to help someone else out that we continued doing that with some of the other businesses on the street.
So, James, paint the scene for us, for people who maybe haven't seen any of the news coverage that you've gotten so far as what it feels like when you show up in South Milwaukee on that little main street and that main drag. How many people have been there? How big are the screens? How much seating is there?
Well, the screen is as big as it gets. And they've been elevating it up. Every game we have to take it higher and higher because there's more people coming. As far as seating goes, we're just letting people bring their own chairs, their own fold-up chairs. I mean, we are a small mom-and-pop shop. We're not a chain. So, and this has really been put together by volunteers from Oak Creek, South Milwaukee, Cudahy, Franklin, the majority of the people that have really helped put this on. It wasn't for the volunteers and our staff, obviously. It wouldn't have happened. But, people just come early. We actually had people showing up 3.5 hours early yesterday.
Wow.
To kind of stake a claim and get their spots, shall we say. So it just started building up really, really early. And as you can imagine, by game time, it was a lot. I don't know if it's 1,500 or if that was more. I don't really know.
It was big crowds. It was good.
And yeah.
I interviewed, I think, the last World Cup, right? Didn't you come in the studio with me? Yeah.
That's right.
So
that's right.
I love this connection to your community. So South Milwaukee, I was the mayor of Oak Creek. We did a lot of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. We didn't do this. But I love the fact that you're working with your community. They're shutting the streets down for you guys, right?
Yes. Yeah. And we started planning this back in March, right after St. Patrick's Day, the block party we held for that. As soon as that ended, we switched to World Cup. It took a good couple months to kind of get everything approved. We have to get signatures from the businesses, as you can imagine. And obviously then with the U.S. progressing out of the knockout, into the knockout stage, the city were really, really supportive in turning that around in just a matter of hours. So Lisa Pieper, the older woman here, obviously Mayor Briesmeister, I mean, the whole crew really, really, really helped us out and were phenomenal in pushing this along so quickly for us.
So has turnout been substantially larger than it was 4 years ago?
Yes. Actually, 4 years ago, we held one in Drexel Town Square.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, USA were playing against England, and it was on Black Friday. So, we held that, and it was a great turnout. But we really wanted to do something, and I learned from how to put the events on, and then we just started holding them outside the pub and trying to help, the other businesses on the streets, pack them out as well. So, it just keeps growing, and there's really nothing to compare it to. I've never been in this situation before, and now we have the final coming up here in a week and a half or so, and we're doing it again for that.
Okay, so that's the next game that you'll air, because obviously the men's team, they lost last night, but you're not going to continue to do it for some of the quarterfinals, semifinals. You're just the next big event's going to be for the championship.
Yes, okay. Yeah, it'll be for the final, and to be honest, I welcome the rest. I'm sad the U.S. lost. But we are physically and mentally exhausted. This has been put together by myself and Gina. She's a math professor full time, but she's been helping do all the operations behind this, and it's been wonderful. My daughter, she's working full time at a PT place. She's coming and helping. My nephew's been here. My niece, my nephew, and their friends. We had South Milwaukee cheerleaders come out last night as well to get the crowd going. So it's just, people are just reaching out all the time to ask us if they can help. And it's a wonderful, wonderful feeling to know that so many people have our back and are willing to, keep this alive and keep it moving forward. And now, we're still busy. Don't get me wrong. We're still busy for the games, but compared to these block parties, we can handle anything now inside.
It's changed. It's effectively changed your business model, right? You're looking at big events and, being able to connect to the community beyond the people can actually fit into your establishment.
Yeah. it's a good problem. It's a really, really nice problem. And like I said, now we've got the final, but I've got customers coming in now and they're asking, can you do this for a Packer game? Can you do this for the Brewers in the playoffs? And I take a breath and I'm like, that sounds good. But I kind of just do one game at a time. So once we get the final out of the way, then we can start looking at other things and maybe trying to include other businesses in the community to you know, to get involved as well.
Love
it. All right, James, before we let you go, one short question. Obviously, we can hear your accent, but of the teams who are left, who are you rooting for?
Oh, well, now the U.S. is out of the way, now that Mexico are out, you know, those are the big teams we get a lot of support for. England, I'm from Birmingham. My family are from Ireland, which is why we have an Irish pub. And I love my heritage from Ireland too. But yeah, I grew up in England. I was there for 20 years and then moved to Wisconsin now 30 years ago. So I'll be able to support England now.
We'll be able to support England. Okay. All right.
I love the story. Yeah. Amaran's Pub. For folks who don't know where it is, what's the address?
912 Milwaukee Avenue.
Right downtown in South Milwaukee. I love South Milwaukee. It's the neighbor city to Oak
Creek. That whole street is so cute.
It's amazing. And he's right about those small. There's a lot of really cool small business. And he's connecting, again, connecting. Key word for him. James, get some sleep.
I will. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
All right. Check out Moran's Pub for the final coming up in, a week and a half or whatever it is?
The 19th.
19th. All right. We'll take a quick break here. Point taken, Steve and Kristen, on this Tuesday. Yes, it is Tuesday, my Monday. You know, the political piece of all this stuff with the World Cup is obviously Trump's intervention into the, you know, the red card suspension.
Yeah, well, we talked about it a fair amount yesterday.
So what was the consensus from the text line and your thoughts?
The consensus from the text line, I think, from yesterday was just that the reality... lot of it was a reality of, it taints... It felt tainted. And I don't know if we'll ever have any interviews with the players, but they played terribly last
night.
They
weren't good last night.
Right? No. Like, it's not... And I, again, not a soccer expert, but I was sitting in the first half when we were playing at a friend's... we were at a friend's house, and the friend is a soccer expert. And even he, who was not rooting for Team USA, he's an Argentina fan, he was like, this is not how they've played this whole tournament, as far as like how sloppy they were, how slow they were on defense, like all just like totally off their game. And so I don't know if there was some kind of psychological thing, because there was so much political drama leading up to the game that threw them off. But after, again, so much political drama from Sunday into last night's game, there was a lot of layers to that story. And then to come out and be like, well, I guess it didn't matter.
He said he just asked the FIFA president to consider the suspension. That's what the president said. I mean, what was he supposed to do? He knows the guy. He's obviously was part of the effort to bring the World Cup here. Whether he got it done, or maybe just they realized that was just a silly...
Well, they didn't realize that it was silly, because they didn't overturn the red card.
They don't generally do
right?
that,
they
ever.
They just suspended the red card.
Does it suggest the power of Trump, man? Even in that situation... Start flipping the results of player suspensions and results of games,
but didn't matter in the long run, because they still lost 4-1.
I don't blame it on that. Credit the other team; they played a great game.
No, they did, but I this is why I probably should have asked James as far as a different the same team who had been showing up against Bosnia, against Paraguay, against. Who's the other team that we beat? Like the games that we won that felt like, oh man, this team came to play. Had that team showed up last night, how much closer would it have been? Or was Belgium just actually that much better than the U.S.?
I can think it's the latter, but I'm proud of the team.
For sure.
I mean, they haven't done that in 28 years.
And continuously, this is the conversation that comes up, right? As far as ideally, there are kids watching who now are like, I want to be Balogun or whatever, right? They see these guys and they choose that soccer is their sport. Our issue in this country is that there's a barrier to entry now because youth sports are becoming so expensive,
mm-hmm.
right? And so like soccer has always been like a working man's sport, that really all you need is a ball, kind of like similar to basketball, but like, you know, this is favelas, right? Like soccer is a sport that anybody can pick
light
up
on
and
the
play.
Equipment side of things, yeah.
But now, because private equity and all these things, like the variables that have led to boxing, probably talented athletes out because they can't afford to actually play.
I gotta say, the president, he's all about the one phone call. He made a phone call and something changed.
One call
changed.
Is all.
Yeah. We talked a lot about politics first hour. Graham Plattner is one of the biggest stories in national politics right now. What will happen in Maine?
Should I look up and see what the betting markets say as far as whether he's going to drop out?
I think he's going to drop out, but he's got to do it quick. And we sort of had a sporty last hour on talking about the new hire at UW-Madison, the AD, and, of course, World Cup hysteria. And I'll go back to what I said before. James Moran is an example of somebody who gets it, a local business owner who's trying to figure things out. In an ever-challenging bar-restaurant environment, he's doing something unique. And I used the word community like three times in that interview because that's what it is. Everybody has to start thinking about community in every sense of the word, whether it's politics. Who are the people in your community that are shaping your future? They don't want to just bitch about the past. They're actually shaping things forward. So when you look at elections now going forward, who are the people that are shaping your future? They don't spend all the time bitching about stuff that already happened. This is my new passion. I'm forward thinking. I demand it now. And if you come to this show or you come at me with, oh, so-and-so happened under Joe Biden or so-and-so happened under whatever, what do you got for me going forward? What's your next big
thing? Done with whataboutism.
It's stupid. It was stupid when it was first used. Those arguments continue to be stupid. And I am looking for candidates and elected officials, people who are understanding how pissed off people are, right? We're pissed off. We're angry. I don't want to spend more money than I have to. And I'm not complaining. I'm in a good situation. But not everybody is. So stop thinking about yourself so much. I know this is a speech, but I don't know why I got so worked up.
I don't know how you got here, but I don't know, but I'm not mad about it.
I'm passionate about it. I think that's the thing. Maybe it's just because I was off for
it. I think you started talking about community.
Yeah, community, man. Bring us together with real ideas that move us forward. That's the message. I should run for something. I'm just kidding. Not going to do that. Although people ask. They still ask.
They still ask.
Yeah, but not going
to. I thought you wanted to be like a speech giver.
I'm
going to
be a speech giver. Hell of a speech. I will get them off their feet.
Standing O?
That's my goal, always.
Always. Shed a tear, standing O?
Yeah.
Run through a wall?
Get, you know what, done. That's my messaging when I do
special. Once you get your new, like, stevescafidi.com, it's going to be the header.
Absolutely. I sell it, and I say it over and over again. We're out of here, but we're doing another show tomorrow. No worries. We'll be back.
We'll see you tomorrow.
That midday show's next.